Good evening. We've all come to this practice because we are sensitive. And we're willing to admit that we are sensitive. Sometimes people are too proud to admit it. But you are here because you know you are sensitive. And when we feel, when we are sensitive, we feel like an irritation, some kind of small irritation inside. In the same way that an oyster feels the irritation of feels the presence of a very tiny parasite that gets inside, and when the oyster feels this irritation without being able to see it, you know, feels this irritation and starts to grow a pearl. So our irritation, you know, is partially due to some kind of anxious feeling about our life, or maybe some doubt, or feel that a piece is missing, something missing in our life, or something's not quite okay, not in balance. Like the oyster, you know, we don't know what it is. It's just some irritation, don't know what it is. Maybe it's emotional. Maybe it's spiritual. It's hard to say, and it is easy to confuse those two. But actually, it's not important what kind of label we give to it or how we categorize this feeling. The important point is how we respond to it. Some people will ignore it. But if it starts to trouble us, if this irritation starts to trouble us, we must respond to it. And when we do, when we turn our attention to how to respond to this feeling, we then are starting to resolve the most important questions of our life. And we are leading ourselves to selfless practice. And that's how we will be able to create a pearl with our life. Nobody wants to feel bad. That would be perverse. Everybody wants to feel good. We all want to feel good. We want to feel loved. We want to feel respected. We want to feel trusted. We want to feel comfortable with what we're doing with our life. We want to feel safe and confident, energetic, all those things. We want that. And those are various ways that we can feel good in the everyday sense, in the usual sense. Those are the ways we can feel good. But our practice is not about feeling good in the usual sense. Maybe that happens. Hopefully that happens. But that is not the point. That's not the goal of our practice, to feel good in the everyday sense. Maybe that happens, but that is not the goal. And so if we strive to feel good only in the usual sense, we will always feel some limitation. We will not resolve our irritation. If we want to feel good only in the usual sense, there is, you know, something more. So here's a rather well-known story involving Bodhidharma, who brought the Zen, who is supposed to have created Zen in China. So the student who was to become his successor, Hui Ke, was already a well-respected teacher. But he felt there was more. Even though people respected him and revered him as a teacher, he felt there was more to learn. And one of his contemporaries said, you better go see Master Bodhidharma. So Hui Ke traveled to where Bodhidharma was residing, and the story is Bodhidharma, you know the story, Bodhidharma sat facing the wall for 8 years. That's the legend, and Hui Ke comes to Bodhidharma's cave in the middle of winter. And Bodhidharma would not acknowledge him. He would not recognize him. He just sat. And Hui Ke stood all night in the cold and in the snow. And the snow rose up. Finally, at dawn, Bodhidharma looks at him and he takes notice of him and he says, what is it that you seek? Why did you stand in the snow for such a long time? And Hui Ke says, I came here to be your student. Bodhidharma says, no. And Hui Ke pleads with him, please take me as your student. And Bodhidharma lectures him. He tells him that practicing Buddha's way is very hard and very long. And it is said that he said the following. If you wish for the true vehicle with a small virtue, a small wisdom, and a casual, arrogant mind, you will spend your time in vain. Admonition. And he means that if you're practicing just to feel good in the usual sense, you will never be satisfied. It would be, I would say it would be the equivalent to picking up a magazine, you know, and just thumbing through the pages and just looking at the pages that interest you, picking and choosing what to read, whatever entertains you, you stop and look at, and if everything else you just skip by. So Bodhidharma is saying, don't pass your time just to occupy your mind and just to feel good. It's more than that. So Bodhidharma's point was the practice is not about just passing the time or entertaining your mind or feeling good in the usual sense. Some scholars say there was no such person as Bodhidharma, but nonetheless we have some interesting stories. Suzuki Roshi had no doubts, and he said in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, he says, according to Bodhidharma, practice based on any gaining idea is just repetition of your karma. Any gaining idea, any ambition, seeking of anything is just repeating your old habits. But to feel good in the true sense, you know, beyond the relative sense, to feel good in the true sense leads to selflessness and to the wisdom of no self. the wisdom of no self. The whole point of the Heart Sutra, which we just chanted, no self, the wisdom of no self. The no self that does not need to be defended or boosted or maintained. When we have that kind of wisdom or have some sense of it, start to develop selflessness and embrace selflessness, then we have a chance to really know who we are, to know who we are in a very large sense. And when we have that feeling, we have the greatest confidence. No more doubts about ourself. Greatest confidence. Because then our mind is settled on our true self, instead of the relative self, instead of on the feelings that just come and go. And every one of us, in our life, in our daily life, sometimes we don't feel so good, things happen. Things change, disappointments crop up. Expectations aren't met. Sometimes we don't feel so good. We feel disappointment, or we may feel sadness, or fear. We may feel a loss, we may feel anxiety. But when we base our life, when the foundation of our life is our practice, we understand the transiency and the impermanent nature of things. And that includes our own life and the lives of people close to us. With that understanding, even when we experience some loss, it doesn't feel like a tragedy, just a disappointing loss, but not a tragedy, because we know that we and everything is selfless. So it's not a mistake, or it's not wrong, it's not a sin to make an effort to have a good life, to be successful, to feel good in the usual sense. This isn't wrong. This is not a sin. We want to feel successful. We want to feel well-liked. We want to be competent. We want to have a vision. And a healthy daily life is based on these attributes. But if we feel some irritation, and we feel that's good, but that's not enough, if we want to understand ourselves in the true sense, then we have to practice. Then we feel good, then we have a chance of feeling good in the larger sense. When we start to practice, when we first come to practice and we hear about selflessness, and we read and we are told that selflessness, that's really important. You have to cultivate selflessness. We wonder what that means, and we try it, or we try to try it, and we say, boy, that's hard. Selflessness is difficult. And when I try to be selfless, I'm always getting distracted. I'm always losing my focus. But selflessness is neither hard nor easy. It is simply inherent. It's not something that we need to gain. It is inherent. It is returning to selflessness that's the hard part. Returning to our selflessness. Because we are distracted by so many interesting and exciting things of the world that are hard to let go of, that say, no, you don't want to be selfless, you want to do all these exciting things. So it requires constant effort to be selfless, even if we are very wise. One of the most beloved Zen teachers in the golden age of Zen, back in the 9th century, was Kuai Shan in China. And here's a long, a little bit of a long quote from him. Describing how difficult it is to be selfless, how much effort we have to make. He said, even though the original mind has been awakened, so that the man is enlightened in reason and spirit, there still remains the inertia of habit, which cannot be eliminated at a stroke. He must cut off the stream of his habitual ideas and views caused by the still operative karmas. Cut off the stream of habitual ideas and views. This requires diligence and determination. So what is known as karma in the Buddhist terminology is, for us, I think it means our habits and our self-oriented tendencies. Self-oriented tendencies that we repeat over and over. So they're called karmas, karma. And sometimes they're very subtle. We are not aware we're doing things out of habit. They are subtle and we are unaware. And because we repeat them over and over without awareness, they become very reactive and we are unreflective about them. They are, in effect, hidden by the clouds of delusion. And they are hidden by the images that we have created to hide them from our awareness. The result will be we are hiding ourselves. We are hiding ourself from ourself when we are unaware of our karmic tendencies. And when that happens, we cannot know ourself in the true sense. So our practice is not about getting something such as feeling good. Zazen is the way to return to our self through our selflessness, through the practice of selflessness with each other and in all the actions of our daily life. And the point of our practice is to become aware, to become awakened to our karmic tendencies, to see them and to be able to say, oh, so that's what I do. Oh, so that's my habit. When we can see them and we can accept them, then we have a chance to put an end to them. And like Suzuki Roshi said, the purpose of our practice is to cut off our karmic spinning mind. So we should notice when we are in the midst of them, these karmic habits. Notice when we are in the midst of them or when we sense that they are starting to arise. We know they are starting to arise, these old habits. When we start to feel anger, when we feel impatience, greed, pride, or all those any of those things. When we start to feel those things, we say, ah, here comes my habit. Here comes my old tendencies. When it happens, when we sense those things, we should immediately return our awareness to the present moment. We should return to ourself. When we can give up clinging to our karmic tendencies, there we find selflessness. So there's really no need to look for the source of what might cause us some kind of anxiety or irritation in the first place. No need to analyze ourselves, because our practice is not psychotherapy. And it's also not analytic problem solving, you know. We simply work backwards to put an end to our karma. But again, this is not reverse engineering. We just simply practice and notice, not give in to habits when we see them. Not giving in to these tendencies is the practice of continually returning to the mind of no self. And that's why we came here. That's why we practice. And that's how we can learn to feel good in a true sense, not just relative sense. Finish with a story, another Zen story. That's an example of how to practice with the determination of Bodhidharma and of Suzuki Roshi. This is a story attributed that involves another famous Zen teacher, Yunmen of the 10th century, 9th or 10th century. So a monk comes to Yunmen, who is giving a lecture to his monks. After the lecture, a monk comes forward and says, "What is reaching the light?" And Yunmen says to him, "If somebody asked you this question, what would you say?" And the monk says, "How about after reaching the light?" Yunmen says, "Forget the light. Give me first the reaching." Traditional kind of story. Give me first the reaching. Forget the light. Give me the reaching. In other words, don't worry about the goal. You know, the light? Don't worry about the goal. Emphasize how you do the activity. Show me your action. Show me the reaching. Show me your immediate action. Don't worry about reaching something that's out there somewhere. Show me your action. Does anybody have a question? Lee.
About our karmic tendencies, I realize that I've come through this practice to notice a lot of my karmic tendencies, but that doesn't stop them. they still come up, but the only thing that I do find to some extent is that I stop and I notice them while they're happening. And I can't always quite get it to the anger to stop coming up, or the whatever it is to come up. So how do we is it okay to just keep, you feel what you feel, and you have that little pause as you're feeling it, where you say, oh, I recognize you. It seems like such a long process.
Is that a problem?
No.
Okay.
Actually, but it's just that is that something that I think, is that the way to handle it? I mean, just to say, I notice you, and I recognize that this is what's happening. Even though you may still feel the same urges or anger, yes, or whatever it is.
And you can say, I notice you, I see you, and I'm going to keep my eye out for you.
I'm watching you.
I'm going to be aware. Okay. And if we feel that even the noticing doesn't seem to put a stop to them, one little trick or technique is stop what we're doing and go do something else for a minute or two. Break whatever cycle is going on, do something else for a minute, and then come back. Like saying to your karmic tendency, I've got to take a break. I'm going out. That's a kind of technique or trick. If we, even though we notice that something wants us to do something that we don't want to do, but yet it's so strong, go do something else. Go sit for a minute or two. Thank you. Thank you.